And today I want to begin in a way by talking about somebody that understands what it's like to go uppity up, up, and downity down, down. And his name was Larry Walters. Larry Walters, probably you've never heard of him, but he went one day several years ago and decided to purchase 45 weather balloons at an Army surplus store. He had this wonderful idea, and he took the weather balloons back to his home just outside of Los Angeles. And he thought if he filled those balloons with helium, he could float up about 100 foot over his neighborhood and look around and see his neighborhood. So that's what he did, and he had some neighbors help him, and he hooked a lawn chair to the 45 weather balloons, and he filled them with helium, and he got a BB gun so he could shoot balloons to float back down, and he got a six-pack of beer, I think, which was probably a must for this venture. Some of it may have been drank before the launch. I'm not sure. But all of a sudden, his neighbors helped him, and the balloons began to launch, and as Greg told me after the last service that it went up so fast that we know he lost his BB gun. It fell off his lap. And hopefully for his sake, he didn't lose the beer. But it went up, and he got to 100 feet, and then he got to 500 feet, and then he got to 1,000 feet, and he ended up at 11,000 feet. And he was in the flight pathway for Los Angeles International Airport, and they had to shut down flights because of Larry Walters floating above Los Angeles. Eventually, the balloons did begin to lose helium, and he landed safely on the ground, believe it or not. Yeah, and he landed safely on the ground, and he was, of course, believe it or not, there was a news crew there. I don't know what the odds of that were, but they asked him some questions. And the first one, they said, "Were you scared?" And he said, "Yes." And then they said, "Will you do it again?" And he said, "No." And then they asked him probably the most logical question of all, "Why did you do it?" And that's when he said, "Because you just can't sit there." You know, sometimes we have to realize that we just can't sit there. That's what went on in the story of faith today, the story of Nehemiah. Now, when we look at this in the Bible, Bible scholars talk about the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. They call them that, Ezra and Nehemiah, because they go together, and they're an important part of this story. But Nehemiah is just an everyday guy. I mean, that's important for you to hear at the beginning of this message, because the heroes we've been talking about in this series, they're not world leaders, they're not military people, they're not philosophers or intellectuals, but they're everyday, ordinary people. And in fact, his job is, he is the cupbearer for the king. His people, the Jews, were defeated in battle. They were hauled off to another country, and for years they were enslaved and put to work. And his job was to carry the cup of wine to the king. King was sitting around in the afternoon, needed a break. Here comes Nehemiah with a cup of wine. And he just had an everyday job. Today he could have been working at McDonald's. He could have been working at Christo's and refilling your water glass. And Nehemiah got a vision from God. It was a vision from God to go back to his hometown, Jerusalem, and to rebuild the walls. And you have to understand, that was really important. Because in this day and age, without walls, there was no protection. There was no safety. The people that lived there could be hunted down. Raiders could come in and steal from them. So the walls were important. And he had this vision to go back and to do it, and he just couldn't sit there anymore. And as I listened to the song, I got to thinking about the song that the band just did, and I penciled this down. I had to bring it to you, because those words in the song, "I'm going to stand my ground, I won't back down." Maybe that's what Nehemiah said. I'm going to stand. You know how hard that was to ask the king for this permission? But he did it. And he said, "I'm going back to Jerusalem, I'm going to rebuild those walls." And it seems like the story from there would have been great, wouldn't it? I mean, he went back and there were Jewish people around as well as non-Jews. And he came back and he said, "I'm here to rebuild the walls." Seems like everybody would have pitched in and said, let's get it done. But they didn't do that. In fact, the group that he had to build the walls, they had all kinds of struggles. Because there were people around, both Jews and non-Jews, that ridiculed him. They made fun of him and said, you can't do that. The job's too big. I sometimes wonder the things we do at our church, if there aren't people that wonder that. Isn't that job too big? When we relocated to this space 9 years ago, were there some people saying, oh, we can't do that. The job's too big. So there were people around doing that. There were people around there slandering the group, saying all kinds of nasty things, calling them names, mocking them. There were people that plotted to defeat them. They came up with a plan, you know. They went out in the parking lot outside Jerusalem and they gathered. They said, we got to come up with a way to defeat what's going to happen here. We got to beat this down. But they kept at it. They stood their ground. They didn't back down. Nehemiah kept going. He was tired. I mean, they were dog tired from that kind of work. Have you ever been dog tired? I remember a time that I had a great idea. We owned a lake cottage, and I was serving a church just 15 miles away, and I had this idea, wouldn't it be nice to remodel that into a home? And I'm pretty handy. I can do most of that stuff. So I went one day, and I started just doing a little. I said, oh, heck with it. And I gutted it out. I took plumbing out, wires out, windows out, doors out, everything. Go start all over and rebuild. And do you know, it took me a year to get it done. And do you know, for 6 months, it was fun? The next 6 months, I was tired. Every day off, every vacation, 15 miles down to Webster Lake, work all day, 15 miles back. That's the tiredness they were feeling from rebuilding the wall. They were frightened because there were people that would really have done things to them physically. So they went to work each day in fear. They were scared of what might happen and strife developed. But Nehemiah kept his leadership going. He stood his ground. He couldn't just sit there anymore. And he continued following God's vision. And that's what it's all about, folks. It's following God's vision and God's dream. And to continue to do that. And personally, Nehemiah was attacked also. He was slandered and people just called him all kinds of names. They tried to trick him to get him to stop. They threatened his life. They tried to get him to compromise. Isn't compromise a wonderful thing? I mean, sometimes it's important to compromise, but when it's God's dream, you better not be compromising. And Nehemiah knew that. And yet they would try. I mean, it would have been like when we decided to relocate, if someone would have said, oh, yeah, let's relocate, but let's just build one of those pole barns out there. That'll save us some money. We'll just build one of those church pole barns, and everybody can go in that. But the leadership had God's vision, and they wouldn't compromise. And they came to Nehemiah with this compromise, and they said, you know, that wall is going to be 40 foot high, but we think that's too high. We'll compromise with you. Let's build a wall, but let's make it 3 foot high. At least it'll keep the dogs out, or the dogs that can't jump anyway. But Nehemiah said, I've got God's dream, and we need to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem so it can become the center of our faith once again. And he wouldn't give up. He stood his ground. He wouldn't back down. He kept at it. And I think that's kind of where we've come as a church. We're in this process in our life right now. Nehemiah is a great example for us because we've had some wonderful things happening in the life of our church. In the last 2 years, our attendance has jumped. We have new ministries. We're fighting child abuse now. We're doing all kinds of new things. New people are coming. Some of you are probably new in the last 2 years because we've grown in that way. And we've begun to study these last several months what God's dream is for us now. How do we dream again? Where do we go next? And we've begun to ask those questions. And some of the discussion we've had has been like, well, maybe we need to add on more classroom space. Or maybe we need to add on more parking lot because on some Sundays, some of you know, it can be hard to find a space. Or maybe we need to add on a sanctuary. Or as one person suggested, we just don't have enough land here. maybe we need to relocate again. I mean, aren't those scary thoughts? Aren't those scary thoughts? But when you have God-sized dreams, you have to walk towards those dreams. When you have God giving you a vision, you have to go towards that vision. And so that's what we're beginning to do, and we're going to have a committee study that. I have people say to me, well, we don't have the money to do that. And I say, not yet. You know, I'm reminded of a story I heard a long time ago that a preacher preached. He said they were going to build a new sanctuary, and the good news was they had enough money to do it. The bad news was it was still in their pockets. So there's nothing we can't do that's a God-sized dream, no matter who the doubters are. And whatever God is calling us to do, we're going to do. Now some people will say, oh yeah, but Jim was brought here to be the leader and to take those next steps. We can't do it now. Oh, baloney. If it's a God-sized dream, God's going to bring you the leader to do it. That's right. And God's going to help us do it. And God's going to take us to the next step. And God's going to bring us the right leader. Maybe Ezra and Nehemiah was a good example today. We planned this sermon months ago. You think God had God's hand in it somewhere? Because it's Ezra and Nehemiah, and I don't know which one I was, but the next one's coming. And it may be Ezra, it may be Nehemiah, maybe Deborah. But I know the next one's coming. And the next one is going to provide the leadership that this church needs. And some people will ridicule. And some people will slander. And some people will compromise. But God's vision is there for us. And we're called to follow that vision. That's what I want us to do. This was a difficult choice for me. I said that a moment ago, to leave this church that I've learned to love. People that I've laughed with, I've ate with, I've cried with. But I did it because I felt it was God's dream for me and for you. Not just for me. I'm going to a church where the staff parish chair emailed me and said, we know you're the right person for this church. And I know that the bishop and the cabinet is going to bring Christ Church the right person for this church. The next Nehemiah in the chain to lead us where God's vision is. But to do that, we have to do it together, and we have to support and pull together. Nehemiah, I think, had four things that made his approach so spectacular. And the first was he depended upon God. That's where we all have to start. We can't depend on Jim. We can't depend on the staff parish committee or the trustees or the band. We have to depend on God and work together. And if we can depend on God, the future that God has planned for our church is amazing. We have to be dedicated. Be dedicated to the task at hand. Be dedicated to God and what God is calling us to do. Because it takes a dedication to accomplish things. Good things aren't accomplished quickly. They take time and effort. Charles Swindoll wrote a wonderful little book about Nehemiah. I'm not recommending the book, but I love the title. The title was Hand Me Another Brick. And anything that's worthwhile, we build one brick at a time. And all the pieces go together, and we can do that if we're dedicated. And Nehemiah persevered in spite of all the obstacles. In spite of maybe we don't have enough money, in spite of getting a new pastor, in spite of getting a new music director, in spite of all those things, we have to persevere and keep on the path. And finally, Nehemiah knew what it was like to stay focused. You know, he stayed focused on his task no matter what happened. When I coached Little League Baseball for a number of years, I always could help kids become much better batters if I could teach them one thing, to keep their eye on the ball. And we have to keep our eye on the ball. And God is leading us to great new things that I can't even imagine if we can stay focused on it. I always believe that there's one of two ways we respond to things. And one of those is that sometimes we can see the worst in the situation. And other times, we can make something happen when it doesn't even look like a possibility. And I wanted to share with you today, in closing, two stories to help demonstrate what approach we might take. whether we're going to not back down and stand our ground, or whether we're just going to give up, whether we're not going to just sit there anymore, or whether we're going to rise to new heights, whether we're going to say, oh, I'm defeated, sit down by the brick pile, or if we're going to say, hand me another brick. The first story is a story. It's not a true story, but it's a good one. It's about a salesman. And this salesman was driving his, I don't know any salesmen in this service. I'm out of luck. I knew salesmen in the first two services. But I had a salesman, and he was driving along one dark, rainy night, and his car broke down, had a flat tire. Didn't have a cell phone, didn't have any of that, got out in the rain, didn't have any rain gear. He's going to change that flat tire. The problem was he didn't have a lug wrench. And for those of you that don't know, just believe me that a lug wrench is necessary to change a tire. And I won't go into any detail. Most of you call AAA now, that's okay. But he didn't have one, and he couldn't figure out what to do. And he saw this farmhouse in the distance, but it was midnight. He decided he had to go up, and he made the trek, and he was muddy and wet, and he knocked on the door. And as he waited for someone to come, these thoughts began to go through his mind, and he thought, geez, this guy's going to be mad because I'm waking him up. I mean, he may come to the door with a gun. I may have to dive off the porch. I said, this is a terrible situation. And he kept waiting, and more negative thoughts began to flood in, and he says, guys, he probably doesn't even have a lug wrench. And then the more he thought, he said, well, geez, if he has the lug wrench, he probably won't give it to me. He won't loan it to me. And just about that time, the farmer finally made it to the door, and he opened the door, and the salesman looked at him, and he said, well, just keep your stupid lug wrench anyway. You know, sometimes when we go in with that attitude, self-fulfilling prophecy always happens, doesn't it? I mean, when you expect the negative to happen, it will. The other story is actually an historically true story. It happened during the Revolutionary War, and I may mess up some of the details, but it's a story about two teenage girls named Rebecca and Abigail Bates. They were out for a walk along the beach, their tiny little town there, on a moonlit night. And when they were out walking, they heard some noise out across the water. And they looked out and they saw a British troop ship. And the troops were beginning to unload and to get in rowboats, and they were coming towards the town to attack the town. They didn't have time to go warn anybody. And so the only things they had with them were the things around them, and one of them had a musical instrument. Like I suppose it would have been like a crude recorder or something. And she began in her best to play a song, and her sister took wood and began to bang it out. And they began to bang out the tune of the Continental Army, Yankee Doodle. And when they did, the British troops heard the music coming across the water. They thought they were going into an ambush. They turned around, got back on their ship, and sailed away. And as the townspeople began to wake and realize what had happened, they had realized that two teenage girls, armed with some pieces of wood and a crude flute, had just turned back the British army and saved their town. You see, when God is on your side, when God's vision is with you, nothing is impossible. We don't have to back down from what we've got planned. We're going to continue to have the dream team meet up till the day I leave. We're not going to back down. We're going to stand our ground. And God's going to give us a pastor that's going to lead us. Lead us right down the road. And so as we go together, I don't want you just to sit there. I want you to be prepared to get up. I want you to be prepared to do more than that. I want you to be prepared to help. Stand up. Everybody stand up. That's a good idea. Be prepared to stand up, every one of us. Every one of us stand up together and be ready to say, hand me another brick. I'm ready to help in God's presence. Thanks be to God for God's presence. Amen.